How are you all this evening? Afternoon. My name's Ajax. I work for Red Hat, and I am essentially the maintainer for Fedora and for RHEL for the X Window system. So getting things integrated and into the release and doing the bug triage and developing some of the new features and all of this great stuff. X is a really cool place to be right now. There's a lot of interesting development happening. We're doing a lot of really cool stuff. But there are still some, you know, the driver story is getting better and our performance is getting okay, but it's still really hard as an application developer to look at your application and know where your time is going as you're writing an X application. The architecture makes it so that you ask the server to do something and it kind of has to do it, but then you just have no idea where that time is going. What is it working on while you're trying to do that? Historically, the answer to that problem has been start oprofile and hope, and then start collecting backtrace information and pray that you can figure out something, some way that makes sense. This is not really a useful answer to give somebody. If you're developing an X application, you're probably using a toolkit that abstracts away some of the detail of where of what you're actually invoking behind the scenes. You're using Cairo and GTK, or you're using Qt, or you're using Java, or whatever else. And so when you start oprofile, you get this idea of kind of what's happening in the server, but until very recently, you didn't have a call trace. You didn't have any way to know, what protocol request you were doing that made all this time happen. You could get a vague idea if you inspected the backtrace, and that only sometimes works. More to the point, there's a lot of code paths in X that you can enter from many different areas. We have this very broad rendering API that doesn't get used in some cases, or we have some operations that are all just conceptually blitting, but are you blitting from the host to the server, or from the client to the server, or from the server to the client, or is it going within a domain of, within the host memory domain or the video memory domain? So you can end up seeing, oh yeah, I'm spending all my time blitting. Great. So oprofile really isn't, sysprof and that kind of thing is not really a useful solution because it doesn't, even as a developer, it doesn't necessarily tell you where your time's going. As a mere user, somebody who has just loaded up Linux on your machine and goes to a website and sees that you load a page in Firefox and all of a sudden your CPU usage in X goes to 100%. What's going on? And, telling somebody to start oprofile is not helpful in that sense. So I wanted something better. People keep asking me, why is my X server taking all my CPU time? It's got to go somewhere. So we have an object in the X protocol. We have extensions that let you add additional functionality to the protocol. And one of these extensions is called X Resource. The resource extension basically adds the client as a first-class object to the protocol. You have an X, all the resources in the protocol that can be created by the client are identified by a thing called an XID, which is just an integer. It's a 29-bit integer. Three of those bits are lost to history and bong hits, and it's not great. You can thank Lisp, actually, for two of those bits. They are explicitly reserved so that Lisp implementations on the client side can garbage collect resources in Mark Sweep without needing to allocate an extra word of storage for each resource. So there's another optimization. That's actually a misfeature. There's an optimization in the way XIDs are allocated that says that they are allocated by the client. If you had to tell the X server, I'm going to start using this XID to mean a pixmap every time you wanted to allocate to create a pixmap, it would be very slow. You'd have a whole bunch of round trips involved. You have to go out to the server. The server would have to say, yes, okay, we can do that, and then hand it back to you. And you create thousands of resources to get an application like Firefox off the ground. And if every single one of those creations was a round trip, you're adding a couple milliseconds each times 1,000 to the application startup performance. So they're actually allocated on the client side. And they're global. Any application can talk about any other client, any other client's resources. So I can draw, this is how embedding works, for example. If I want to put a Flash application, I want it running in a different process than my web browser. The way I do this is I create a window in the web browser and I tell the Flash player, go draw on this window. So any application is allowed to talk about anybody else's resources. So they're globally visible, but they're allocated on the client side. So how do you make sure that two applications don't create the same resource ID at once? The way you do this is there's a mask in the client identifiers. It's actually handed to you as part of the initial connection handshake that says, you, Mr. Client, you have 8-bit, we slice up the resource range. We say top 3 bits, lost to history, 8 bits of client, effectively client identifier, and then the remaining 21 bits are resource identifier. And so when the client wants to allocate a resource, it just picks one that's unused from the low end of its range and goes, and then tells the server about it lazily. It'll say, oh, by the way, I want to draw into this PIX map, and I've been using this number to mean this PIX map. So what this, as a side effect of this, an XID uniquely identifies a client. You can look at the top, middle, 8 bits, and know which client you're talking about. So this is what the resource extension does. It allows you to say, given this window, or given this object created by this other client, tell me about the resources it's using inside the server. Right now, this is sort of a static memory allocation tracking system. It lets you know, how many color maps do you have allocated, how many cursors do you have allocated, how many core fonts, how many PIX maps, how many windows, how many graphics contexts. And then for more strict counting on PIX maps, which are the actual item of pixel storage, it can give an estimate of, how much actual physical memory is being used by that PIX map, because you can say, oh, it's got this size, this width, and this height, and this depth in color bits. So right now, all it can do is really tell you memory usage. It can tell you which of your clients is using the most memory within the X server. And you can find some things with this. You can find leaks. You can find, I'm leaking GCs because I'm just creating them and not deleting them. They'll go away when your client exits, but since we have to hold on to them, the server has to hold on to all resources that clients create until they're explicitly destroyed or the client dies, it looks like a memory leak in the server. So that's what the resource extension is used for right now. And it seems like this would be a natural place to add per client CPU time accounting. But it's not really obvious how to do it, or at least it wasn't until about 2 months ago. The access control extension actually makes this astonishingly easy. It's a really neat extension. Eamon Walsh of the NSA has been working on it. And it's part of it was developed as part of the SE Linux effort. It's a framework for building security models, which is nice and hand-wavy. But what it means is that you can load a policy. Built based on this, you can then define another extension that enables you to load a policy into the X server to say what clients are allowed to touch what other objects. The thing I said earlier about all objects being global, well, if you add this, then it's not true. And if you do this, then you can make it so your Firefox window can't attack Nautilus. If you run some rogue JavaScript in Firefox, it won't manage to escape out into the rest of the window system and inject keystrokes into user helper that's then letting you run a PAM configuration. So this is actually a really cool feature. Essentially, in order to implement this, it looks at every object in the object system, all your color maps, all your PIX maps, all your everything else, and sticks an access control wrapper in front of it that says, are you allowed to do it? And so it's got hooks everywhere for every object. I want to see this PIX map. Am I allowed to know this PIX map exists? Am I allowed to read from this PIX map? Am I allowed to write to it? All of these things are just everywhere. You can do security context transitions where you're entering into one client's security context, and then the server's going to be executing on behalf of that client. Everything else that you do for the remainder of that request is as though it's that client. So there's as you enter different phases of the server's processing of a request, you have hooks for transitioning in and out of it. So it's quite impressive. It's a very powerful set of features. One of the sets of hooks that it includes is the audit hook, which right as you go into dispatch says, I'm about to enter a request processing for this client. And then another one at the end of request processing that says, I'm done. I'm out of this client now. So what you do is you add a hook there. And you say, I want to, right before I go into request processing for a client, start recording. Get time of day. Go grab a timestamp and stick it in a structure somewhere that's record what time I started. And then at the end of the client request processing, you do another clock get time to record when you're finished and look up which request and record which request you executed this against. So you can say, was this a core request? Did I use putImage for this? Was this a render request? Was this an OpenGL request? Was this any of the other extensions? So you add this to xResource by saying, watch client time or unwatch client time. I want to watch what happens to this client. I'm going to, and when you enable that, then the resource extension will stick itself into the dispatch path and start recording the time that it applies to that client. And then every once in a while, your monitoring process, some application like Top, will say report client time. And what that will do is it'll dump all the time back over the wire to the recording application that it's used since the last interval and zero the counters. So if you want to do accumulation, you just do it on the client side and you say, I've used this much time over some interval. The report is really just struct time spec, although you have to define it in terms of the wire protocol, which means I truncate it to card 32-bit integers for seconds and 32-bit integers for nanoseconds, because time spec is actually defined in terms of host integers. But if you're taking more than 4 billion seconds to do something, you probably don't have a performance problem that can be solved by this. You're probably not trying to go fast, so this seems fine. 32.896 is an odd number. You have 128 slots for the core protocol, and then 128 slots for extensions, and each extension beyond that, by convention, uses the next byte of the request to say which sub-request you're using. So the shared memory extension has sub-requests for create pixmap or create or put image. And so what we do is we say we have 128 plus 128 times 256, which works out to that. So it's just this big blob of data that you throw back. And this actually works pretty well. But as you can imagine, this has some effect on monitoring. NoOp is the simplest request in the protocol. All it does is it goes to the server and says, hi, it comes back. It's just a ping. And so you want to know how much overhead are you actually incurring for watching the performance of these operations. So what this graph gives you is the blue bar is basic server, nothing being watched. And you get just about 1.9 million operations a second. That's on this laptop. Your numbers will vary. If you turn on monitoring, but not for a client that's doing anything, it drops a little bit because it has to check, is this the client I'm watching? No. OK, don't do any more recording. And so if you say, start an X logo, watch what it does. It's not going to do anything. And then run X11 perf NoOp and see how many NoOps you can do per second. It drops to about 1.8 million. If you start watching what the X11 perf process is doing, you drop to about 300,000 per second. But NoOp isn't doing any work. What happens if you do a request that actually takes some time? So this is what happens with, again, the virtual frame buffer, just not attached to any hardware. This is what the performance change looks like for those same three sets situations for very common requests, just bleeding data back and forth from one area to the other. And you see for get image, all of these verbs are from the perspective of the client. So get image to pull 500 by 500 pixels down, I get 125 a second. For put image, I get about 300. For the shared memory version of put image, I get just under 800. And for copying 500 by 500 within a window within the server, I get just over 800. And you can see, actually monitoring that doesn't really affect your performance any. It all stays pretty well below the threshold of measurability. And so it's fine. If you're doing anything that's actually taking time, the overhead of measuring it is not significant. So one thing, for example, that you'd notice here is you would think get image and put image should be roughly symmetric in terms of request processing. We just had a conversation about this earlier that now I know a little bit better why it's not. But let's ask, what happens if you look at the difference in get image performance across different size of get image requests? Again, here I'm running a virtual server and I'm running the performance test on the same processor. So they're basically splitting the CPU about 50-50 down the line. If you look at top, you see 50% going to each. The time that I'm measuring here, I'm sampling every 5 seconds to get time reports back from the server. And I say, how much time were you spending actually handling the request? Everything else from, you know, everything else the rest of the way up to about 2.5 seconds is just the overhead of getting the data in and out of the server. So you can see, for if you're doing 10 by 10 get image, you're spending almost no time, about 0.3 seconds in the server actually processing the request. As you get to higher sizes, you spend more time actually processing your request because you're moving more data. But something in the very low end of the performance is just all about latency. Everything, some either you're doing a whole bunch of buffering to figure out where this time is going, or you're just not getting it out onto the wire quickly enough. So already we can see that there's at least one case where we're doing something suboptimal, at least for this case, in how we're getting requests in and out of the server. Great results. Let's try something more interesting. What happens if you run GTK perf, which is just a instance of blasting through the server and doing a bunch of things to test performance? More than anything else, it ends up testing the performance of the GTK theme that you have loaded, because different themes draw decorations differently and have different sets of icons and different amounts of blending. So if you run 500 iterations of GTK perf, and then this is how much time you're spending in the top top seven time users within the X server. This is actually a really, really promising result. We spend almost 19 seconds, over actually almost 20 seconds, compositing glyphs, doing the text blending. Great. That's something we know how to accelerate in hardware. So if you're doing this in software, you don't do it. This also means that if we could take that time to zero, right away, you know, if we had perfect hardware acceleration and could take that time to zero, you would knock almost 20 seconds off of GTK perf time. Render trapezoids is next, and this is actually how we construct the glyphs that you use for text rendering. You draw a whole bunch of really tiny trapezoids. No, we don't do that anymore? Oh, that's for path filling, isn't it? Okay. So... Okay. So render trapezoids is constructing masks that you're going to render through. And that takes another 8 seconds. Again, I'm told we can do this in hardware now. So that would be not yet. Yeah. This is software. Yeah. But this is actually, I mean, this is what's saying, if you have perfect hardware acceleration, if these times go to zero, here's how much time you're taking out. Polyfill arc. I'm not lying. That is the third highest hotspot.
It is massively accelerated. The software is very efficient for it.
Yeah.
Why? That's just GTK perf not being a very interesting benchmark. It's not benchmarking without real applications.
Yeah. If you look at GTK perf, it draws a bunch of circles as one of the tests.
Oh. They exercised all the GTK primitives.
Yeah.
Seemed like the right thing to do at the time.
It should be. I don't know why the circles aren't going through Cairo.
No. That was an intentional design decision to not make, to not change the performance characteristics and the output quality, even not to improve it, of GTK.
Okay. So you actually have to change the widgets in order to get the Cairo rendering path.
Yeah.
Change GC shows up too, and that's kind of bizarre. I don't know why you'd be spending. Why would be the GC is the graphics context. It's the thing that says you are going to draw with this foreground color and this background color, and with this stipple mode and this fill mode, and it's not typically used for a lot of rendering anymore. This would not show up on Cairo performance numbers, but I did not actually manage to find a good Cairo benchmark for this presentation. Anyway, you go down the rest of the list, you can see polysegment for doing a bunch of lines, you see render composite for doing the actual final image blending, and render fill rectangles, because that's just clearing buffers. So clearly, you can actually look at an application, run it over some test case, and get an idea of what time you're spending in the server. Yay. So this works. It works as of about last night on my laptop. I had written a good chunk of it, and I actually came in on a weekend to finish it on a day when I knew nobody would be talking to me about RHEL. And about 3 days later, I went back to go look at it, and I could not find the code. It was not on the disk at all. So I had to rewrite it between then and now, most of which was on the plane, and some of which was over the last two nights. I actually started with making some Python bindings to the X-Resource extension, which is my personal preference for not doing anything in C. I hate C. It's a terrible language. I really wish we would use less of it. And so I have, I've started getting that binding in so that you can have the data pulled straight out of X-Res and into Python, and then hook that up to PyGTK and have this pretty top-like GUI that you can be, just be running, decoding the protocol for you and saying, you're spending this much time here and in this client. And then you know, watch every client, watch everything it does. That'll get you pretty far. The next piece of this that's actually going to be hard to do is instrumenting xlib and xcb to be able to get the backtrace all the way back. The X protocol is asynchronous for much of its operation. So if I send a rendering request down the wire, I just assume it works and I carry on with my life, and then sometime later the server actually finishes it. And if it fails, well, I might have had three or four more requests in the queue and I just have to cope with it later. What this means is that by the time you see something happening here, by the time you see that this performance profile is going really bad, you know, you'll see you're calling get image within the X server, which apparently you should never do. What was triggering that on the client side? So what I want to have is kind of a ring buffer or similar of requests within the client that can say, yep, I called get image and I called it from here. This request was generated from this stack trace, so that I can go all the way through and reconstruct the call chain across this process transition from the client into the X server and then back out. So I can know where my time is going at the level of, I'm making this API call at the top level of my canvas. That would be great. I'll get to that at some point. One of the things that's the biggest performance win for us is not transferring image data over the protocol. We have a shared memory extension that allows you to just create a shared memory buffer and then tell the server about it, and the server will go pull the bits from it, and that way you don't have to copy down into the kernel and then back up into the server just to get the bits across. This is sort of awkward because it requires that you create the buffers that you want to render to on the client side ahead of time. You have to know ahead of time that they're going to be shared memory, system 5 shared memory segments. And that's how you have to allocate them. If you don't, then you have to copy into a shared memory segment on the client after you've created it, and then tell the server about it. And that copies the whole thing you were trying to avoid in the first place. So what I've been talking with my VM guys about is a new system call called mShare. Ideally, what you would do is you just say, look, I've got this region of memory. It looks linear to me. Make it look linear to the rest of the system. Give me a file descriptor for it. And just pass it across the socket and let them mmap it now that they've got it. And that way I can lazily create shared memory segments on the fly, move it across from one to the other. And so I can say, I've got this image. And Cairo rendered to it and then decided, oh, I need to give this to the X server. Here, just take it. Don't copy it around. This would solve at least one performance problem that we're seeing in Cairo right now, which is that Cairo does not force all image surfaces to be created ahead of time as shared memory segments, because to do so would actually be really wasteful. There's a limit to how big of a shared memory segment you can create. Yeah?
You start to page size boundaries for that, and if it's a generic malloc segment, that you could have anything in the upper last page, and do you really want to be handing that off to X?
Sure, why not? Why not?
Because you don't know who else in your client process malloc that. It might be some other part of your process.
Sure.
It's security violation. You can't hand it stuff like that.
Process.
No, it's handing it from the client to the server. So it's pre-malloc RAM in a client. Unless you 4K aligned it, we're using POSIX memoline.
Yeah.
Which possibly would, if Cairo could use POSIX memoline instead of...
Yeah, if you're rendering API when it creates services, it just bothers to align it to a page boundary, that'd be fine. But again, your server's already root.
Not for long.
Sure. Servers are... you're already trusting the server to do nice things with your data, in a very real sense. You're asking that it be
That's
that it be what hugged.
Image data and your X data.
Yeah.
But
the security violation, the security problem you're concerned about here is that you think that you're running an untrusted X server.
Doesn't the X only need read access to that space?
Yeah. Yes. The X server. Well, For the put direction, yes. For if I'm putting data to the X server, then yes, it only needs to be, the server only needs read access to it because it's just going to copy out of that to video memory. If you wanted to do this in the reverse direction for get image, which would be reasonable, then it would need write access to it. Again, though, you're connecting to a server where you think that you can't trust it to do nice things with your data.
The idea is that you don't want to give it data that it shouldn't have, no matter if you trust it or not. You don't just pass all your data to everyone else. That's, the whole point is that data at the start of the page is not the same as data in the middle of the page.
Well, you can opt in and out of that as you please.
I was going to say, pass it to memory line.
If you allocate with mmap in the first place, but if you were allocating with mmap in the first place, then you would have just made it shared then, right?
Because mmap would have been better because you can resize it. This space that generally can't resize, and that's the problem. If you're trying to have performance, you don't want to recreate the segments all the time.
Yeah.
So instead of zeroing them out, it's actually quite nasty. It's also the round trips.
Right.
So a mmap extension where I could part do FD passing would be roughly equivalent, but I could play the game of resizing it as needed as a like a cache.
Right. This is at least one area that I'm interested in coming up with a solution for, so let me know. This also doesn't tackle the DRI profiling problem at all. DRI is sort of it's a different beast in that, DRI doesn't really matter for this bit of analysis because you're already in the client. You're not leaving the process to figure out where your performance time is going. You might be in the kernel, and you might be trying to figure out some large piece of the kernel's execution time that, what is it doing? But you're not trying to transition across into the X server. You are, in some sense, capable of debugging all the way through and finding out what your call trace is at the point in time where DRI is taking that much time. So while it would be nice to do this and to have a unified view across the entirety of the X API, GL included, this really is sort of outside of the scope. We do need a profiling solution for the DRI and for OpenGL in general, but I haven't been working on that yet. And that's not what this addresses, but it does need to be done. So on the server side, there's a bunch of things that I want to do to start working on improving some of the performance characteristics there. The first couple obvious things that jumped out at me just while bringing this up were that the dispatch overhead is unreasonably high. It was clearly written for the VAX. There's a whole bunch of multi-buffering of requests you get them off the wire and then you stick them in a couple of request buffers in the server and then you might pull them out later. And then if the request is a small size, then you feed it into a request buffer and then write it all out at the end of a dispatch loop. So there's all this copying going on that we really could be doing better now. The first thing you could do is for image transfer, if you are using the wire protocol for it, you could zero copy this. And you could just say, well, here's a request header, and I have to have frame buffer FB host memory storage for it anyway, because FB does it, although TTM this might not be the case. So just read the header off of the side, make sure that it looks well-formed, and that I've got enough data to satisfy the rest of the read request, and then just have readv pull the data straight into FB. And past that, anything else that you want to do as far as synchronizing the contents with video memory, you do later in the put image hook. This would actually be rewriting put image the entire way to get this the other way around. Likewise, you could zero copy from on the get image side by not doing get image into this buffer and then stuffing that buffer down into the kernel in request. You could have write v just pulled directly from frame buffer storage down into the kernel. And that would be pleasant because image transfer is the one thing we do that's huge amounts of bandwidth. Even for the shared memory case, this would probably be a win. Sorry? Nope. By the time you hit xproc put image, you have the entire image in an allocation buffer that is not FBs. It's not the frame buffer storage. It is the protocol storage. The request buffering, likewise, is sort of ridiculous. One of the things that I would like to do is I'd like to switch to using ePoll or a similar API on systems that have it because we have to read a variable amount off the wire for a given request. We have to look at the request, see that it's this long, and then pull data from it. And if you just use poll, which is a level triggered API, then all you see is, oh yeah, that socket's ready for reading. And then you can ask the kernel with an ioctl how much data is available to be read. And it will say, not enough. And you'll be like, all right, sorry. And you come around the dispatch loop again, and no more data has arrived. And so you repeat this process infinitely while you try to wait for this data to arrive. Poll does not really help this. The only thing you can do in the poll situation is you take it out of the poll set every once in a while and put it back in on like 10 millisecond granularity just to avoid saturating the CPU with, wake up, more data yet? No. Epoll, on the other hand, you can treat as a level as an edge-triggered interface where you read it, and you see, oh, it's ready for reading, but it doesn't have enough data to satisfy the request yet. Okay, let me know when more data has arrived, and then check later. And so if you use epoll, then you can actually just let the server, the kernel, buffer up this request for you, which it has to do anyway, instead of buffering it into the server and then accumulating this long request and then eventually dispatching it. So you get fewer copies if you had to do it that way.
There's an interesting potential issue with that in the network case, which is if you leave stuff in the kernel, PCP doesn't really like to move the data very much.
If you have a client where it's not getting full requests to you in time, then leaving it in the kernel to reduce the window is advantageous, because that way the network, it doesn't, it's not necessarily advantageous, but it's not hurting anything. The data is already not arriving fast enough in this case. I mean, that's the case. That's why all this that's why the buffering is there. So there's also, yeah, Carr.
It sounds evil, but couldn't we solve that simply by shared memory buffers for the protocol and simply using the sockets as signaling, I've written all my protocol requests now, I'll send you a byte to say, wake up and read. I know it would require changes in the xlib side, but
so we
for local clients only, not
yeah. Remote. Oh, for local clients.
So,
yeah.
Remote clients, you know, all bets are off in performance.
Local clients, that's actually been implemented. Precision Insight did an implementation of that back in the day, and it wasn't necessarily a huge performance win. It was like 10% for very round trip heavy requests, and not much for anything else. For local clients, it's not a win because you never starve the socket anyway. Local clients don't starve the socket because they already have the data, they want to be rid of it. Whereas with network clients, the thing that you're trying to mitigate is that the network in between is not as fast as you are.
This is an area that we've looked, there's a thing called splice that is
currently. I haven't looked at splice yet.
Splice is basically, well, it's not sockets though, so you'd have to still have an alternate, it's pipe based.
Right.
But it's zero copies. It basically goes from here to the replica.
Yeah, I remember. I do remember seeing it and thinking that that was interesting, and then not looking at it any further. So it would certainly be interesting to add that. I mean, we've already got a transport abstraction for different kinds of sockets, which is how you can do TCP and Unix sockets. So adding a pipe for it would be just fine. There's also, moving on a little bit, there are some things inside the server that are just really quite silly about how functions are called. The render composite call, for example, has, you know, how many arguments on the order of 12? Yeah, you only get to pass like 3 in registers on x86. And so when you go through every single layer marshaling, you get proc composite off the wire into exa composite into some lower level that dispatches down to the driver to actually implement it. At every single function call level, you're marshaling all these arguments onto the stack and then back out. So you end up spending a fair chunk of time just moving the data around. If you just stuck it in the structure up front and passed that structure around as a pointer, then you would be saving a whole lot of memory traffic just on and off the stack. So there's a bunch of things like that would be nice to fix just to get the core server to dispatch as smoothly as possible. Everything past that is acceleration architecture, which fortunately other people are working on. So I really, besides the fact that I finished it, you know, last night, there's a couple things that I want to have addressed before this goes into upstream, but I would like to get it out as an update to the XRES protocol and have it ship be a standard feature as part of XORG. I'm not completely convinced of the API. I think it's fine at right now, but the fact that it can't account for GPU time is sort of distressing. I don't know what the performance counters look like, so I don't know what kind of time I want to account for on the GPU. Ideally, I'd be able to say I'm spending almost no time in the CPU. I'm just setting up requests, handing them off to the graphics card, and the card is eating them as fast as it can. But once it's eating them as fast as it can and doing all the acceleration it can, you want to find out, you know, eventually that saturates, and then where's your time going? Okay. Do you think it's interesting? So we can get, the comment there was we can get information about when requests end. Do you think it's interesting to get information about what subsystem is the thing that you're blocking most on? For GL, for example.
I'm writing that
template
right now.
Yay!
We already have a rough, how busy is the GPU application today that we use for GPU tuning?
Okay. Right.
So, huge, very useful. For 2D apps, who cares? Sarcastic.
Yeah. Well, no. Mozilla isn't. I mean, Firefox is the performance test case. And it's a 2D application, and it's not fast enough. You can get to a trivial web page that just bogs down. So, no, 2D apps aren't fast enough. This also doesn't account for sleep time, which is sort of a detail the protocol. When a client has slept and then you finish the request later, how much time is it spending asleep?
There are no requests like that. Except when they start waiting on the hard drive.
Yeah.
No, that's not sleep time. He's talking about putting the request to sleep for a while and start restarting it.
Yeah.
The only thing that's for is for using clock servers.
Okay. Because we are using it elsewhere, but we're not not as a performance feature.
Yeah.
Okay. So probably the only thing we need to add then, we still just ignoring sleep time, you could add a flag to what kind of time you want to watch, and you could say, I want to look for CPU time and I want to look for GPU time. And presume possibly some other kind of time. Right. It also doesn't account for dispatch overhead, which is everything outside of the block between, you know, starting the request and ending the request. But we kind of just minimize that and stop worrying about it. Also, the code is buggy at the moment. It leaks watches, which is to say, if I'm watching this client and the client dies, I'll catch that. But if I'm watching this client and I die, the watch stays in place. Oops, just a bug. Also, I didn't bother to write the dispatch for what happens when the client is the other byte order from the server, which is typing. And the extension request reporting, I'm not totally happy with either. The reason is that it's merely a convention that you use the second byte of the request as the sub-request type. This is not actually enforced anywhere.
There's a function per extension now that gives you the minor opcode for the request and the extension.
Okay. So we could actually, if you extended the opcode, the API a little bit here, you could say, tell me how big of a request field I'm actually going to get when I query all my time. Because you want zeros for everything where you didn't spend time and bits for the bits where you did. Okay. So it needs some small revision, but I think it's progress. And I'm told that I'm running towards the end of my time. So if there are any further questions or comments, then I will be happy to hear them. Otherwise, please enjoy this picture of a cute baby fox. He's cute. He's so tiny.
How much percentage of time does Firefox or Gecko take laying out stuff compared to rendering stuff?
Layout is sort of a rough problem. Pango is not solvable. I mean,
text layout as well as graphics layout.
Yeah. It depends on what kind of page you're looking at, but there are certainly paths for which it is spending inordinate amounts of time rendering or doing something. If I try to load a page in Bugzilla on Firefox 3 beta with, so that all it's, and because Bugzilla is slow, all it's doing is just waiting for, is drawing the spinner. That's all the animation that's happening in my Firefox. And that's good for 15% of the CPU in my X process. So there's clearly some time that it's just blowing away.
I actually see that my battery life goes down severely if I just leave Firefox in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, not doing anything except redraw when something else pops up in the foreground.
It certainly needs work. Like I said, I have some demos to say yes. I can get numbers out of them. They're meaningful. I haven't really taken a hack at this with either a hardware server yet, as in one that's actually drawing to graphics hardware, or with anything other than the benchmarking applications like X11 Perf and GTK Perf. So I don't have a good answer for that yet. But you know, we can go find out.
An anti-alias text.
Sorry.
Anti-alias text.
Anti-alias text goes through render. And you treat it as a mask that's just 8 bits of alpha, which is the translucency, and then you take a solid color and you stuff that through the mask and blend that onto the destination. So this all goes through alpha. When you saw earlier render composite glyphs 8, that's anti-alias text blending.
And the performance measurement I did of Mozilla a while back suggested that for a great majority of web pages in English, all of the rendering time is spent rendering glyphs.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
That certainly jives with my experience.
Yeah, I think that's not necessarily true for a number of other scripts.
Okay. So at the beginning of the presentation, you talked about OPROFILE being hard.
Mm-hmm.
And OPROFILE can give you some generic information about cache activity. PerfMon is a lot harder,
mm-hmm.
but it can give you also more detailed information about specific threads and what they're doing with the cache.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys thought about that at all?
PerfMon will save the world, yes. I mean, that's the thing.
It won't save the world, but it will give you some data to fix serious performance problems
mm-hmm.
because your cache is
orders
of magnitude performance, not just percentages.
We have had, I've had some interest in, I mean, there's standard techniques for cache mitigation in terms of large image transfer, but really, if you have that problem, it's because you don't have a GPU, right? I mean, in some sense, if you want to have, if you want to have fast image transfer, you have this other piece of silicon do it, so it never hits your cache at all, so you don't blow out the data that's there, and you're not using your CPU to affect a memcopy. So yes. That would be lovely. And for the case of like we're doing things that are just manipulating the object model and figuring out that, oh, we're chasing 20 pointers and blowing out cache lines to do it, PerfMon would be advantageous. But I don't believe that it's truly the rendering performance path for the applications that we've currently got. And if it is, you're pretty doomed anyway, because you don't actually have a graphics card. You have a scan-out buffer. But yes, I'm happy to look into integrating this with other performance monitoring technologies. And if PerfMon can tell me more information about this, then excellent. Anybody else? Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.